Let me in. Shiba chiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba chiba. Open up your soul. Shiba chiba. Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your. Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. The person that I have enjoyed seeing all of their performances, and it's the holiday season, and they're doing fun and interesting stuff, and they're going to tell you all about it. I would like to welcome the fabulous Katya Smirnoff-Sky. Hello.
Oh, hello, Marilyn. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your program. Now, to any of you listeners who have no idea who I am or why there's you can't see how tall I am, a Russian lady of indiscriminable accent and unplaceable, vaguely Eastern European accent, barely sitting in my chair now in my home. I am the Countess Katya Ludmila Smirnoff-Skaya, once Eastern Europe's most sought-after mezzo-soprano, understudy, and I'm thrilled to be on the program with you,
and I'm thrilled to have you. So what I want to first find out is, how did you become the international sensation that is Katya Smirnoff-Skaya?
Oh, well, Marilyn, that is a very long story. I began my professional career in a long time ago. I was a little girl growing up in Soviet Union. Not that I was ever little, but I was young once, long, long ago. And I had a career on the operatic stage until I met my late husband, the Count Nikolai Alexander Ivanovich Smirnoff-Skaya. When I met Nikki, I was 18. He was 78. But from the moment our eyes met, I knew we'd spend the rest of his life together. And they were the three best years I ever had. And then I after his death, I was left with nothing. Just my furs and ewes, a Picasso, two Chagalls, a minor Titian, some lovely Louis XIV furniture, a Bentley, and my five-bedroom apartment at the Dakota. I was destitute. I was destitute, Marilyn. So I had to go back to work. And I started performing in the cabarets and the bathhouses of New York. Now, this was the 70s. We had a lot of fun in those days. But they didn't want to hear, Chopin or Wagner or Puccini. No, they wanted the popular music of the day. And so I invented a genre. That's a kind of music, listeners. A genre of music called popera, which is the love child of opera and pop. And I did this for years. I traveled all over the country performing at the finer gay bars and cabaret rooms of the world. And about 16 years ago, the good people at the New Conservatory Theater Basement, that's a theater here in San Francisco, they asked me to write a little holiday spectacular. And I said, sure, why not? I would love to bring Yuletide gaiety to the world. And for all these years, I've been doing that. To your question, Marilyn, I've been performing here in San Francisco for the last 20 years or so with a monthly show at the Martuni. And this year I'll be doing my holiday spectacular at the NCTC, the New Conservatory Theater Cellar Center.
And what's, you talked about popera, so what will we hear?
Well, in my holiday show, you'll hear all kinds. There's something for everyone, from classic holiday fare to sort of, disco klezmer magic. You know, I do all the standards, things like, Eight Nights Only, which is a Hanukkah song, originally from the musical Dream Girls, but rewritten as a Hanukkah piece. I do Proud Mary, about the Virgin Mary, to the lovely Creedence Clearwater version of the song. Let's see, whatever. I sing a marvelous song called Stalin Baby. You see, my mother, the great Ekaterina Sholinskaya, prima ballerina for the Bolshev, considered by one to be one of the most beautiful women of her generation, very talented. Mm-hmm. She was the final mistress of Joseph Stalin. I know, crazy, the vicious dictator responsible for the deaths of millions of my countrymen. But you know, to a little girl, he didn't seem that bad. I mean, he was like a Russian Santa, you know, a big man, a uniform, facial hair, and a book with the names and deeds of every Soviet citizen. Mm. He knew who was naughty and nice, but he didn't have elves do the hard work. No, he had the KGB. So, you know, I take all kinds of songs, and I rework them into holiday standards. It brings me great joy.
Now, you've been doing this for 20 years, you say, and is there anything in your repertoire that you are particularly fond of?
Oh, well, I mean, I love all my songs, which is why I like to do the same ones over and over again. I mean, if it's new to you, then it's exciting. This year, I'm very excited to sing a song that I found recently called Sugar and Booze, made famous by Anna Gasteyer. She's a hoot. She's on that show Saturday Night Live, where she was a long time ago. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she gets it. Because, you know, we people in this business that is called show, you understand this, man. And we,
yes,
during the holidays, we're so busy, you know, gigs and things every day. And we survive on a diet of sugar, booze, and copious amounts of coffee. And it's a fun holiday show song that I'm sure will become a standard soon.
Well, when is the holiday spectacular?
That's an excellent question, man. The holiday spectacular is Wednesday through Thursday, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd. At NCTC. There are a few tickets left, I believe. It's a very popular show. Mm-hmm. People like to watch me prance around a stage in sequin gowns with my six-piece band. You know, I have a band that consists of piano and drum and sax and clarinet and an oboe English horn, because every little band needs an oboist.
Yes, that is true. That is true. So if people wanted to get tickets to your holiday spectacular, the very few that are left, how would they go about doing that?
They would go to nctcsf.org, and then they'd click on the picture of me that says for more information, and then they can buy a ticket, and then I can make your Yuletide gay.
And can't get any gayer. Now, I understand that you have a distant relative staying with you named Conrad, who knows all the...
I'll pass it over.
Thank you.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Conrad. Conrad, would you please introduce yourself to our listening audience?
Sure. My name is J. Conrad Frank, and I am the creator of the Countess Smirnovskaya.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a Bay Area native. I grew up down in San Mateo, went to high school in the city, San Francisco, and I've been doing Katya as a character for 20 years.
Now, What was the inspiration? Is it someone in your family, or is it just sort of a general whim?
Well, it's sort of two-pronged. I grew up singing as a boy soprano. I did a lot with the San Francisco Opera, and then Bergassi, the Pencil Boys Chorus. And then I ended up getting a degree in vocal performance in opera. And anyone who's in classical music has met a number of ladies of an indescribable age,
mm-hmm,
from the somewhere in the Soviet bloc that had huge careers somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was sort of based on these ladies, and then also on my grandmother, Jacqueline, who is where I get my white stripe from, and who was a consummate hostess. So I sort of draw from a lot of people in my life, and then she's gotten a little more kooky, mm-hmm, over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of fun.
I have a couple of questions. So, first of all, since part of it is based on your grandmother, did anyone in your family, or has anyone in your family seen you do this and went, wait a minute, that's Nana?
Of course. Well, I mean, my whole family has seen the show, and it has been coming for years and years and years. I think even my grandmother saw it before she passed away in 2006, 2007.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So the white stripe is
very, very much. She had a white stripe mm-hmm. through her hair from the time she was 20. So it's a clear homage, mm-hmm. I think, that is appreciated by my whole family. And it's a nice homage to her. And sort of in a further way with this show, my grandmother threw huge Christmas Eve parties, even though we're some nice retail Jews from San Mateo. So I always associate the holidays with her, which makes doing this show extra special.
Aww. So when you first started doing Katya Smirnovskaya, what did you do? Because you say she's gotten kookier over the years. So what was the first kernel of Katya?
The first kernel, well, the Katya came into existence, I think the first show was at Martuni. Mm-hmm. There used to be a show called Bijou, which Joe Wicht, mm-hmm. local favorite piano player, once known as Trauma Flintstone, mm-hmm. And I sort of started when we first met. And so Katya was a guest on that very first Bijou show at Martuni's. And she came pretty fully fledged, at least, you know, some of the basic stories started there.
The fabulous gown. The
character
wigs.
Really developed when I was a young artist at NCTC in a mm-hmm. full circular way, mm-hmm. where they commissioned me to write my first three or four shows. In fact, I wrote the Holiday Spectacular show for the New Conservatory Theater mm-hmm. in 2016 years ago. I don't know, math, not my friend. So I wrote this show for them, and there are pieces of this show that you will see, dear listeners, if you come to my show, that have existed in the show for all 16 years. They've been refined, they've been tuned, the jokes have been honed over the years, mm-hmm. But the skeleton of the original show is in many ways still there, including a couple of numbers that I've tried to cut over the years, but people just get upset, so I have to bring them back. Mm.
So in creating this character, did you start out being really hilarious like that, or did it come naturally and you had to write a script, and did that come naturally?
The funny thing is, like, when I created her, you know, I come from a performing background, mm-hmm. so a lot of the jokes and things were there when I first started. But it really honed itself when I was forced to write material. Mm-hmm. I was working with a director named Andrew Nance and a music director named Joseph Cannon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I had to write my first show for NCTC, I didn't feel the need to write it. I'm like, well, Katya sings this song. Why do I need to tell a story? Uh-huh. But they challenged me to sit down and sort of write these stories. And thank goodness, because these stories over the last 20 years have compiled a really cohesive and deep character mm-hmm. with a very strong, very long timeline, because I've got to be somewhere in my 70s at this point for Katya to make
right,
it.
Right.
I remind my audience that I'm as old as I need to be for all of this to make sense.
So I'm actually curious about when they forced you to sit down and write it, then was the first one, was it a really good script, or did they go, no?
You know, as with any show, when I'm putting together a show, I pick the music first, always. Mm-hmm. And then, I pick a theme for the show, and then I pick the music, and then I write connective material mm-hmm. Between the songs. So, you know, how do you get from singing, I don't know, a Taylor Swift song to doing, I'm trying to think what follows that song in my other show, but, you know, how do you get from point A to point B? Mm-hmm. And I figure, well, I'll tell stories from this remarkable woman's life where she's met everyone, you know, she was partying with Liza Minnelli at Studio 54. Mm-hmm. She met Taylor Swift in a coffee shop in, Nashville.
Sure.
You know, like, because clearly, if I say it's true, I believe it, and I tell the audience, then it is. Uh-huh. And there are stories over the years that definitely have had to have cut, been cut, have changed. For instance, this year, when I sat down to look at my holiday show, I've always done a large, I'm Jewish, and my character converted to Judaism at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat down to look at my script, and I used to tell a story about, you know, Katya taking a birthright trip to Israel, which in this climate is not a story or a conversation I wanted to have on stage. So I had to find a new story to make the material I wanted to do relevant and uplifting. And it was a great challenge for me and a lot of fun. And the thing I came up with is even more funny and a more exciting message than the original material was.
Got it. So has there ever been a storyline that you did that in your mind is so ridiculous that it makes you laugh every time you approach this story?
There are many of those stories. I mean, the Stalin story is pretty ridiculous.
Sure.
And then in the holiday show, I tell a story about Katya being booked to be a guest with the Rockettes at Radio City Music Hall for their holiday spectacular.
Okay.
And just being so excited to stand in a line of women her own height that she doesn't bother to ask what they wanted her to sing. And so she was given the Carol of the Bells, which is not a great Estonian folk tune. So for the Von de Probe, the day where you sing the song for everyone, she decided to change it completely, and I end up doing a 6-minute medley of every bell song that you have ever heard. And the premise is just ridiculous. It makes me giggle. I mean, the opening story to Eight Nights Only, my Hanukkah song, is about Katya's eight-night affair with William Shatner.
Okay.
But it was a love so passionate that it could only last 8 nights. So, I mean,
it burns so brightly.
It burns so brightly that it could not continue.
I understand.
And so those sort of stories just bring me joy. And I also love putting in stories like heart stories that are true and make you feel something.
Mm-hmm.
Katya tells a lot of stories about her daughter, Catherine, who's 36, getting older every day.
Sure.
And about, you know, going back to New York to spend time with her and her grandchildren. So, I've constructed this ridiculous, you know, real story about someone.
Mm-hmm.
And what's nice, I get feedback a lot from audience members that there are times in the show where you forget that she's not a real person.
Right.
And that is extremely rewarding. I also had a funny anecdote from someone the other day who had come to my very first year of the holiday show, and she has a 16-year-old child who's getting getting her driver's license.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, I just want you to know, I was having drinks at your holiday show and found out I was pregnant the next day. So it's a tradition, in the words of the great Zero Mostel. Tradition. What more is there to say?
So is Katya the only character? Is she the one character that you do, or do you have other alter egos that also perform in lieu of Conrad?
I can perform as myself, as Conrad, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll perform as whoever is written for me to perform. I do a mean Joan Crawford and a very good Roz Russell, as well as a very good Katharine Hepburn.
Okay.
Because I love doing Katharine Hepburn. Or, as I like to do it, a Kate Mulgrew, Captain Janeway, as Katharine Hepburn.
Okay.
Which, to me, is hilarious. Captain Katharine Hepburn Janeway of the Starship Voyager. I'm so happy to be here. You try getting through the Delta Quadrant without your caffeine. Balloons. I don't know. Right now, I'm actually doing a play at the New Conservatory Theater Center called Ruthless.
I want to see that.
Where I play Sylvia
so
St. Croix, which is just a delight. Mm-hmm. Running through the 7th of January.
And have you done this role before?
Sylvia in Ruthless?
Yeah.
No, this is my first time. I have loved the show for ages. It was done first in 92.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been updated quite a bit since then. And I remember in high school going to see a friend do this down in Palo Alto, I think. And so it's a show that stuck with me for years. And I had been offered to do it somewhere before the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
and then that fell through.
Sure.
And Ed Decker, he's the artistic director at NCTC, and I were having a conversation in his office one day, and he's like, you know, I've always wanted to do Ruthless. And I said, well, so have I, so why don't we do it?
Nice.
And it worked out beautifully this year, so we're doing that show, and they're taking the week off of Ruthless to let me do my holiday show on the Act 2 set.
See, and I'm like, how long is Ruthless going to run? Because I...
Ruthless runs Wednesdays through Sundays until the 7th of January. So there's two more weeks of that.
Okay.
Starting the week after Christmas. It's a fabulous show. Five incredibly talented women and myself singing our butts off, making people laugh.
And an evil child.
Tears night after night.
I love anything with an evil child in it. It's you know.
Oh, yes. This is the Bad Seed meets Gypsy.
Yeah.
It's All About Eve with a dash of anti-mame.
It's
hilarious.
I'm
one of the best things
I've
been in quite a while.
I'm excited about that because I'm going to be, for my listening audience, I'm going to be out of town in the next couple of weeks. So I was sad that I was going to miss Ruthless, but now I'm not going to. So this is great. So let's circle back to Katya Smirnovskaya's Holiday Extravaganza. Is that the proper name of it?
Technically, Katya, or dot, 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 because I like an ellipse. Katya, a holiday spectacular.
Okay, okay. And what are the nights again?
It is the 20th, 21st, and the 22nd of December. I believe there are a couple of seats left if you go on to nctcsf.org
mm-hmm.
And click on Katya, a holiday spectacular. Learn more. You can snag one of those few tickets. I do give away gifts at the end of the show,
okay.
Things that I have collected over the course of the year that I no longer want that might bring joy
okay.
to someone in an audience.
Okay. And then for Ruthless, give us the deets on that.
Sure. Ruthless is running through the 7th of January. It will be resuming on the 25th or 6th. 27th, maybe, I think, is that Wednesday? I'm not sure. And it runs Wednesdays through Sundays. The
mm-hmm.
Wednesday shows are at 7:30. Friday and Saturday are at 8. And Sunday matinees are at 2. For more information, you can visit nctcsf.org and click on more info for Ruthless or for tickets. Select your day and come and laugh for 2 hours. And it's a pleasure. You will not regret it. I promise.
And then after this holiday season of fun plays that you're doing, what's next on the agenda for you?
Well, I'll continue. I'm at Martuni's once a month. I'm there the third Sunday of every month, as I have been for 18 years now. I think we're going on 19.
Wow.
Which is a long run
yeah.
for a monthly show,
yeah.
now that I think about it. So I'll be doing that consistently throughout the year.
Uh-huh.
And there are a few other projects in the works, but you can always keep up with me on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook, Katya Smirnovskaya, 2 F's, 2 Y's, mm-hmm. 2 vodkas, 1 person. or follow me on TikTok, where I've got 200,000 millennial and Generation Z followers, along with random people in the Midwest.
Nice.
Who enjoy their Auntie Katya.
All right. Well, Katya/Conrad, I want to thank you so, so much for being on the show today. And I'm looking.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope we get to share a stage again soon.
That would be lovely. I know. It's been forever, right?
Way too long.
Way too long. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And happy holidays to you and to all your listeners. Stay safe and stay warm and dry.
All right. Okay, people of Earth, you have the opportunity to see Katya Smirnovskaya at the New Conservatory Theater Center, or you can catch her at Martuni's. There's just so much. And Katya is a delight to behold. If you get a chance to see Katya Smirnovskaya, you will be just a lucky so-and-so.
As I walk down the street, seems everyone I meet gives me a friendly hello. I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so. Ooh, the birds in every tree, they all sing merrily. They sing wherever I go. I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so. If you should ask me the amount in my bank account, I'll have to confess I'm slipping. That don't worry me, confidentially, I got a dream that's a pippin. Each night when the day is through, I hurry to a home where love waits, I know. Ooh, I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so. In my bank account, I'll have to confess I'm slipping. That don't worry me, confidentially, I got a dream that's a pippin. When the day is through, each night I hurry to home where love waits, I know. Gee, I guess I'm just a lucky so-and-so. Just a lucky so-and-so.
They call me Backdoor Santa. I make my runs about the break of day. Break a day. Oh, oh, oh. I make all the little girls happy while the boys are out to play. Look at him. I ain't like old Saint Nick. He don't come but once a year. Oh, 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 oh. I ain't like old Saint Nick. He don't come but once a year. Here. I come running with my presents every time you call me dear. Look at here. I keep some change in my pocket, chase the children at home. I give them a few pennies so that we can be alone. I leave the back door open so if anybody smells a mouse, and with no scent I'll be in trouble if ain't no chimney in the house. They call me back no Santa. I make my runs about the break of day. Look ahead. I make all the little girls happy while the boys are out to play. That's what they call me, back no Santa. That's what they call me. They call me back no Santa.
That's what all the girls call me. I give them all the presents. That's what they call me. They call me Backdoor Santa. And I like them to call me that. They call me Backdoor Santa.
Howlin' Wolf and Backdoor Man from his Best, the Chess 50th Anniversary Collection. Before that, we heard Clarence Carter and Backdoor Santa from A Classic Soul Christmas. And we started the entire set off with Charles Brown and Just a Lucky So-and-So from Just a Lucky So-and-So. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco, and there is an annual tradition that has been going on longer than I can even remember, but then I have a terrible memory, so it makes sense that I can't remember most things. But the person who does remember all things about it is the founder of the annual Kung Pao Kosher Comedy event. Here to talk about it, I would like to welcome not just Lisa, I want to say Gedoldig, but it's Lisa Gedoldig, and Rich Aronowicz. Welcome, the two of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you.
So we're going to start with Lisa, and we're going to talk about the inception of the Kung Pao comedy, because I remember reading about it in this thing called a newspaper. It's called the Pink Section, which a lot of people don't even know what that is. But I remember reading a little bit about it back then, and it's been going strong forever. So give our listening audience the history of it.
Yes. Well, it started in 1993, and this is the 31st annual. I was performing at what I thought was going to be a comedy club in South Hadley, Massachusetts, called Peking Garden Club. And I got there, and it was a Chinese restaurant. And I called a friend in New York the next day and said, I just had the most ironic experience. I was telling Jewish jokes at a Chinese restaurant. And out of that conversation came the idea for Jewish comedy on Christmas in a Chinese restaurant. So I had never put an event together. I had never written a press release. I just grabbed some comedian friends and wrote a press release. And we had 200 people show up and 200 people turned away from the door. And it's been going on since then. With Henny Youngman and Elaine Boozler and David Brenner and Shelley Berman and every imaginable Jewish comedian under the sun. And the fabulous Rich Aronowicz, who is gracing our stage for the first time is on the line, and he's a comedian from New York who I found out about from my cousin who went to summer camp with him. And then Rich and I were both performing at this Borscht Belt Festival in the Catskills this summer, and I thought he was brilliant and asked him to perform.
Well, I have a lot of questions. Rich, I promise you I'm going to get to you because I also have some questions for you. But I want to go back to that moment when you go up to the restaurant. You're standing outside. You're like, okay. So what are you doing? Are you standing just sort of in the middle of the tables? And like, what's the setup? And how do you wrap your head around the fact that you're at a restaurant getting ready to tell jokes?
Are you talking about the show in Massachusetts?
Yes.
To the idea
yes.
of Kung Fu?
Yes, yes.
Well, a comedian had come through San Francisco, and I met her at a show, and she told me about this guy who was booking a women's comedy night in Massachusetts, and I was going back east.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed at a friend's house, and I thought I was going to a comedy club, and like I said, I got to a Chinese restaurant, and I just thought, this is so ironic. But the guy who was running the comedy show was basically just looking for a space in town that could operate a show, and this Chinese restaurant said yes. But it was very fortuitous because then the whole Kung Pao idea came about.
Uh-huh.
And then
so
you know, I thought it was going to be a one-off, and then
but did they have a
coming?
Did they have a setup? Did they have a stage?
There's a stage.
Okay,
yeah, so it's the same thing at the Chinese restaurants I've been using in San Francisco over the last 30 years. There's a stage because. Maybe a Chinese wedding takes place there, or different events, or karaoke. So there's tables of 10. People eat Chinese banquet style, Lazy Susan in the middle. All of the plates are shared by people, family style.
Okay, that makes more sense because I sort of pictured you just sort of standing in a bunch of tables and people are eating and you're trying to tell jokes and not.
But you're trying to eat and I'm trying to tell jokes.
Yes.
Though some comedy shows are like that. But no, there is a stage and people have come there to see the comedy as well as have the meal. So it's not like some gigs that Rich and I have probably both done where you're just the background noise and someone's at a cafe or mm-hmm. restaurant and not realizing there's going to be comedy. So it's a package deal. People know what they're getting.
Okay, so let's pivot to Rich. So how long have you been a comedian and when did Kung Pao comedy appear on your radar?
Well, I've been doing comedy since I was 18, years ago. And I met Lisa, I think during the panty. We met on Zoom. We did a Zoom show, which is a whole different thing. You know, you try to. It's like non-alcoholic beer. You can't really get high, but you're still doing it.
Uh-huh.
And and then she saw me at the Borscht Belt Comedy Festival and was like, "Hey, I've got this show." And I was like, "Great, let's do it." I mean, we've done shows. This sounds like a great setup. We've done shows where like. We're interrupting people's, you know, when you start in the beginning, you're like, hey, I got a great show. It's in a well. You got to bring your own bucket, but it'll be a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
We've done shows. This sounds like it's a perfect setup. And when you've been doing it for 31 years, it's going to be, obviously they know what they're doing and they've gotten some amazing comics, myself included. But so yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, now it makes me curious about what were, for both of you, what were would you call the most surreal places that you've had to do comedy where you're just kind of white-knuckling it, you know, you're just praying that you get through the set?
I used to do a club in Manhattan where they would, people would stand on the street and they would convince tourists to come to this club,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't police the room. And the owner he looked like Barney Rubble, and he was just an awful guy.
Okay.
And he would have us deal with hecklers. A heckler is someone who screams out, is drunk, and is yelling, is interacting. So this woman and I are going back and forth, and she proceeds to get up and turn green and launch puke at the front of the stage at me. She literally tried to throw up at me, and the owner handed me a mop. So I was mopping and throwing dirt at the same time.
Lisa, top yes. that.
Yeah.
I can't.
Follow that.
I've just done Chinese restaurants, and once somebody wanted me to perform at a very, very orthodox show, and they said that I could tell jokes, but I couldn't sing because my voice might excite the men. And I'm like, no, that's definitely not
going to
happen.
Okay. Well, it doesn't rise.
I haven't had any of the horrible gigs.
It doesn't rise to weaponizing vomit, but I like it. Wow, that's just nuts. I'm gonna relive that on my own time. So Rich, when you started doing comedy, did you have sort of immediate success at it, or was it that you sort of just kept doing it, and then one day you were funny?
So I was, this was years ago. I grew up in New Orleans, as mm-hmm. most Jews are from. And, yeah, I grew up eating kosher jambalaya and matzo ball gumbo. Mm. Thank you. So I was outside of a movie place where they used to serve alcohol and people would smoke cigarettes. And I was outside and I was talking with this guy and he was like, oh, you're funny. We have an improv group next door. If you tell a joke, you come back and you open for us as the comedian. So I told a joke, and that's how it started. And that guy was Dr. Ken Jeong from The Masked Singer and The Hangover.
Oh.
And he ended up becoming a big star. But I was, you know, I was 18, so I made a lot of mistakes in a market that didn't matter, right? Like, New Orleans is not a comedy town. It's a music town.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, characters and boxes and hats, and I was all over the place. And I started by going by the name Smooth Daddy Johnson because I was 18 and I didn't know any better. I thought I'd get a laugh before I get to the stage kind of
thing. Sure.
And then I went to college in Atlanta and I used to do the Uptown Comedy Corner, which is a notoriously tough room, urban room. And they would tell you at the beginning, if they're not funny, you boo them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got booed off stage. I went to college 3 years. I got booed off stage for 3 years. I went back every week.
Wow.
Because I go, you know what? I'm going to get good at this. And the unreasonable dream of going, you know, your will has to sort of block out all of reality.
Sure.
The business designed to make you quit. So I would just go back every week and take my punishment. And I had friends come to see me one time, and they were like, they bought me a Frosty, and they were like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, what's up? They're like, I was like, yeah, this is just how it goes. I gotta learn how to get good at this. But it's just, you gotta put your ego aside.
Did you ever win the room over? Ever?
Never.
Wow.
Never.
And you still became a comedian. You're still like, I'm doing this.
I mean, I did. I think I took a little bit of a break, and then when I moved to New York, I lost the name, and I picked up the work ethic, and then I just started grinding. And that's the whole, you know, standing on the streets and carrying garbage. And like, I used to work at a club where I would seat people. And so to make sure that I could actually get an honest feedback from the audience, so they go, well, the guy that just sat me is not performing. He can't be a real comic. I would wear a disguise when I sat them. I wore like fake glasses and a hat with a fake ponytail.
Uh-huh.
And I would change my shirt. And then I would perform like I looked like a totally different person. So they didn't know I was the guy that just sat them.
So given how little people liked you those 3 years, how did you persevere and how did you make the transition from being someone that people groaned when they saw on the stage to someone who actually was a decent comedian?
It's the unfortunate and fortunate thing about comedy is it's experiential, right? So
mm-hmm.
like, you start to get a joke that sort of works. You just put that in the bullpen. Then you get another joke that kind of works. You put that in, you get one that really hits. You go, okay, we open with that. And you start to just learn it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you just sort of go, okay, this joke works. Okay, this one. And, you know, a lot of times I have jokes that I think are funny in my mind, but you'll never know till they leave my face and enter mm-hmm. someone's ears, and mm-hmm. I either get a reaction or I don't. That's just how it goes. I mean, till this day, it's like the most exciting thing is when you come up with new material. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the fuel to keep doing stand-up. And, you know, I think civilians don't understand the need to perform, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it. Like, some people, I mean, it's just a drive. I just, like, I've got 3 shows tonight, and I'm looking forward to, like, okay, I got a new bit. I could change this.
Mm-hmm.
I could do this. It's exciting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, then I want to ask, Lisa, for you, did you have a similar trajectory, or what was the universe kinder to you?
I feel kind of spoiled. I was the best woman at a friend's wedding in 19, 89, mm-hmm. and I gave a tongue-in-cheek speech, and then everyone asked me where I performed, and I didn't. And then a couple of weeks later, I was at El Rio in the Mission, mm-hmm. and they had a Wednesday night comedy night, mm-hmm. and there was a poster on the board. This guy was giving a class for stand-up wannabes at his house up the street from the club. Uh-huh. So I did that for four consecutive Tuesdays and was just lousy and would just hear myself in the third person and stop and comment and critique myself. And then we had class one night at El Rio. We went up before the scheduled comics, and being on an actual stage with a real audience just felt so good, and it clicked. And then Malcolm, the late owner of El Rio, came up to me and said, if you want to perform sometime, you know, we'll give you 10 minutes. And about 3 months later, I got the courage to call him and go on stage. But I refused to tell anyone in my life that I was doing it. Okay. I didn't want anyone I knew in the audience. For some reason, it's okay to perform to strangers, but not people you know. So I started performing. I was 27 in 1989. Uh-huh. And then a year later, I think, Josie's opened, and I started going by there, and they started booking me. And then in 1993, this whole Kung Pao idea came about.
So
I haven't been in the mines so much as Rich has. I definitely didn't have to
run the gauntlet.
Mop up any vomit.
But I got to tell you, I've done a show. There's a Boston run, and they have a show in a Chinese restaurant, and it's like the greatest comedy audience I've ever performed for. And like, you know, it's really the energy of the crowd, and if they know what they're getting into and they're excited, the room is inconsequential. You know, that's really, I mean, look, you want low ceilings, you want good lighting, you want good sound, but pretty much it's really, you know, this could be as great as any show ever. I mean, I think it's kind of cool. You know, a lot of the shows that I really love in New York are these weird pop-up shows they're doing, like, in vintage shops and, at Katz's Deli, and they're crusher shows. So I think really, you know, the room is insignificant, to my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Got it. So for the people who might be Kung Pao virgins, where
yes.
is it, and what can, like, do they need to dress a certain way? Will there actually yes. be food?
Yes. So there are 3 days, December 23rd, 24th, and 25th, two shows a day, mm-hmm. a dinner show with a 6-course meal.
Wow.
And then a cocktail show with hors d'oeuvres. And then if people don't want to gather or they're listening to this from somewhere outside the Bay Area, you can also watch on live stream because all the shows will be live streamed.
Oh, wow.
And it takes place at the Imperial Palace Restaurant in San Francisco's Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
The restaurant we had used for over 20 years closed during the pandemic, or rather converted into a supermarket. And then we were completely virtual for 2 years, and then last year we were elsewhere. So we're back in Chinatown. KosherComedy.com has all the information and the link to tickets. And you do need to buy a ticket ahead of time. Many of the shows will sell out before this weekend.
And so where exactly is the restaurant?
It's called Imperial Palace. It's on Washington between Grant and Stockton.
Okay.
In San Francisco's Chinatown, right across from Portsmouth Square and a half a block from the new Chinatown Uni Station. So it's right in the heart of Chinatown.
Yeah. And did you...
As we've been for all of these years, except for the couple of years that were virtual because of Armageddon.
And did you say this is your first time in that space, or is it a second time?
It's the first time in that space, and the banquet manager just happened to have been the banquet manager 20 years ago at New Asia, where we used to be, so I didn't have to start over again with Jews and Christmas and food. He knew the concept. He had worked the event before. I was so happy when I found out that he was on board.
Excellent.
But it's the first year there. This will be our new home. New Asia, the building is being torn down. They're building low-income housing, and then sometime in the near future, the restaurant will be back, but for now we'll be at the Imperial Palace.
Okay. And if people wanted to find out more about Kung Pao Kosher Comedy, how would they go about doing that?
They would go to koshercomedy.com, kosher with a K and comedy with a C. Everybody always asks how many Ks are in there. There's only one K. So koshercomedy.com has all the information on the performers, who's performed in the past, mm-hmm. the beneficiaries. We always give partial proceeds to two different organizations. This year is Chinatown YMCA Food Pantry and the Hebrew Free Loan Association. and everything they want to know about what's being served and where the restaurant is and how to get tickets. All the information is at the website.
Excellent, excellent. And then I just have one question just out of random curiosity, which is you said that you you met Rich because your cousin went to summer camp with him?
Yes. My cousins who grew up in Atlanta went to summer camp with Rich. I don't know, a Jewish summer camp somewhere in the Southeast. Rich, you can fill us in on that part.
In Hendersonville, North Carolina.
So
right by Asheville, by Charlotte. You know it's a small town. You have to reference another small town
sure.
to get to a town you've heard of.
Sure. And this, like, I've never been to a summer camp. Is that kind of a, is it an East Coast thing?
It's very
it's
much
a Jewish
East Coast thing.
Okay.
I know some people who grew up in the Bay Area who went to camp as well, but I feel like everybody I knew, well, everyone I knew was Jewish growing up, but we all went to summer camps, and I went to a broken-down, Yiddish-speaking, lefty summer camp in the Catskills. But my cousin Monique, who grew up in Atlanta, told me about Rich. Every so often she mentions, oh, I know this comedian. And I went to his Instagram, Rich is funny and just cracked up. He does amazing crowd work, and then he does this crazy, like, spandex outfit dancing around the streets of New York and records people's reactions or lack of.
Oh!
Yeah, there's a story behind that whole dance thing, but I don't know if we have time to get into it.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Do we have time?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so, yeah, during the pandemic when we were, like, just doing Zoom shows and everyone was scared, I was like, how can I help? And so my friends said, go on TikTok, and all I saw was, like, young girls, you know, with the butt cheek and the side boob doing the, you know.
Uh-oh, we seem to have lost Rich, so I'm not going to be able to hear that story. Wah!
Oh, no, and I definitely can't finish it. So these young girls with the butt cheeks, and maybe he'll call back in.
I believe he's. I believe he's back on.
I think I hung up.
Oh,
I got disconnected.
Oh, there you
I'm
are.
Sorry.
Oh, it was the side boob just got you all discombobulated. So go on.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so I just saw these young girls, you know, doing these, and I thought it was ridiculous. So I made fun of it. I put on a bikini, and it went nuts. And then this woman, and I won't say who she is because she said, "Please don't talk about me." But I'll just say she gave birth to me. She said, "Can you please stop doing this? It's mortifying." So it was exciting to upset her more than anything else is to, you know, keep her complaining. But the truth is I had a lot of people saying, look, we're scared and this and that and the other. This really helps. So I just sort of did it for that reason. And people seem to like it. I don't know. It's sort of guerrilla style. All of a sudden I just start dancing and people are like, what is this? And it's, you know, it's the internet. So it's you kind of do what you have to do to get attention. And you kind of bring them in for the dance, and then they stay for the comedy. That's sort of the idea.
Got it. Got it. Got it. Well, I'm just so thrilled to have the two of you on. You've made me, like, today's show made me laugh up, down, and sideways. So I appreciate both of you, and I'm really glad that you guys are making the world laugh. And I hope that YouTube doesn't force you to have to come up with new bits faster than you can do them.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you. So
appreciate it. Looking forward to coming to San Francisco and the internet.
It's a beautiful. Oh, yeah. One more thing. You said it's live streaming. How do they do the live stream thing?
You go through koshercomedy.com, and that links you to City Box Office, and you buy a ticket.
Okay.
For the live stream.
All
and
right.
You can watch on live stream or replay at a later time or date if you can't stay up past 6 or 9 o'clock.
Well, we are getting older, so that is a possibility. All
actually,
right.
These days I'm feeling like going to sleep at 6 because it gets dark so early. I have to try and stay awake for the shows next weekend.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll stay awake for your audience. So
I'll stay awake. Not the way to end the interview. I'll be awake.
All right, Rich, Lisa, thank you both for being on the show today.
Thank you
for having us.
All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go out and laugh and have a good time and enjoy your holidays. So you should be doing that. There's so much to do, especially during the holiday season, that if you're not doing it, it's because you're choosing not to do it. It's not because there isn't stuff there to be had. Mr. Ford is going to be pleasuring your ear hole. So I'm going to leave you with some Dr. Bizarre's original Savannah Band. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.